Welcome to Our Shepherd's View, an in-depth discussion with the Most Reverend Michael Mulvey, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Corpus Christi. Join us now as Bishop Mulvey shares his thoughts and reflections on this week's gospel, as well as other issues and events happening in the diocese.
Good morning and welcome to Our Shepherd's View on this Palm Sunday. Jesse DeLeon here with Bishop Michael Mulvey. Holy Week commencing. We are at the start of it here, and a very, very meaningful and very, very dramatic gospel we will share this morning.
Yes, we're reading. Of course, everyone is probably very well aware of the reading of the Passion of the Lord from St. Matthew's Gospel. It's quite lengthy and detailed. And what I thought we would do this morning, Jesse, is that I would summarize the first part, and then we, in the second, first part of the gospel, leading into the real drama of the crucifixion of Jesus. So as the gospel reading starts off, if we read the whole thing, the long version, we see Jesus being set up by Judas Iscariot. And what I want to look at as we go through the Passion this Sunday is how Jesus experienced what we experience. I think sometimes we see Jesus as someone that's apart from us, but as we know that faith is really an encounter with Jesus. So when we can recognize in Jesus our own experience, our own on a different level, of course, none of us that I know of, well, maybe there are some who go through a passion such as this, but it's important for us to see that in all of this, Jesus had us at heart. He would not have done what he did, even coming on earth, was for our sake. Everything he experienced was for our sake. Speaking to the blind man was for our sake, to see that in our blindness, he's there for us. Speaking to the woman of Samaria, which was forbidden, he was there for us, for the whole of humanity. When I say us, every human being is worth the same in the eyes of God. So Jesus was there for all of us, and we can recognize ourselves and some of our experiences in him, and hopefully also receive from him how God's grace can work in us as well. So with that little introduction, then we could look at Judas Iscariot, went before the chief priests and asked, you know, what price do you want for this man? The fact that Jesus was surrounded by betrayal from the very, very beginning of this, what we call the Passion, the Lord's Passion. And yet, even in that, he went on to celebrate with his disciples the Feast of Unleavened Breads and being there for the Passover meal with them. Sometimes, you know, when things happen to us, and, you know, we're not superhuman. Jesus is both God and man, and I don't mean to also negate the graces that we can have to act differently than we normally would from our instinct. But he was surrounded by this sense of betrayal and future loss. And yet he knew that there was a sacred purpose to his presence on earth and with his disciples. And so he went to the upper room where he celebrated the Eucharist with them. In looking at the Eucharist, you know, sometimes I think we see it as an act that is 1 hour. If you just look at the consecration, like 10 seconds of our whole week. But there's a context that Jesus celebrated the Eucharist with, and that was that he was being betrayed. He was being handed over by the powers of this earth, by gossip, by misunderstanding. He did that for us. And so when we come to Eucharist every Sunday or every day, we're in a context. Jesus, what he is doing on our altars today, because we believe his real presence is there, and the celebration of the Eucharist is a memorial of that crucifixion, in fact, the entire event of his Passion. And he knew that his betrayer was with him. Judas sat there at the table with him. But Jesus was so selfless. I think this is one of the first lessons really to learn, the value, the depth, the beauty of selflessness. We all have a sense of betrayal around us. There's somebody we can always point to that did us wrong or slipped up or whatever it is, and we can take that route. Being angry, being vengeful, everything else, that consumes us.
the resentment builds up.
Exactly.
And it continues and it becomes
more powerful.
More powerful, yeah. Right.
But we look at Jesus, he didn't allow Judas's betrayal to distract him. He didn't, you know, become obsessed with Judas and his betrayal. Instead, he knew what he was about. This is important for us. Do we know what our life is about? Have right. we identified that? Or do we just live life day to day? But Jesus, in this passion, really unfolds for us the beauty of who we are. We're to be selfless. And if we are, we can look at life different. So he takes the bread and he breaks it and gives it to the disciple and saying, take and eat, this is my body. Now, for them, it was probably didn't have the full meaning until the next day, of course, when he was crucified. He gave us already in anticipation the memorial of the greatest sacrifice, the greatest love, that as we take and eat his body, it is truly present. And what he did on the cross, he did for you and for me, for every human being. And it takes faith to recognize that. And then he took the cup, the chalice, and he gave it to them saying, this is the blood, this is my blood of the covenant, which will be shed for many, on behalf of many, for the forgiveness of sins. You know, selflessness is going that extra mile. So in this sense, Jesus went all the way, mm-hmm. shedding his blood, giving his body, but in that, the life-giving element of the body is that blood that is circulating through us and poured out for every human being. You know, when we do take the Eucharist and we think about that, we need to spend time of what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. What is happening here? It's not just, oh, it's Sunday and I go and I just receive. Mm-hmm. We got to get beyond this haphazard, just I do it. No, something's happening here. Even on Sunday, even today, on Palm Sunday, on the Passion of the Lord, and every day that we take the Eucharist, something, God has done something for us in our lives, and it's repeated over and over in the Eucharistic sacrifice. It's the selflessness of God's love shown to us in Jesus Christ. After that, we see that Jesus predicted a denial that they even knew him. Mm-hmm. And Peter, of course, stood up and said, not me. You know, I'm, and think about that, how maybe I have promised fidelity to someone and yet I deny it.
Right.
And so he says, not me. But then Jesus said, before the cock crows, you'll deny me three times. And of course, unconsciously probably, and in fear, mm-hmm. because Peter was afraid that he would be identified with Jesus, that he may end up with the same fate. And so he, in fear and in uncertainty and insecurity, he denies him three times. He leaves Jesus standing alone. And I think for us, again, on this time of Holy Week, is to look at the times we've stood alone. We felt that we've been betrayed, denied. You know, somebody does something and they accuse us, and so we stand alone. How many times in life do we really feel that standing alone without the support of others? This is where I think we can really look at, do we really stand alone? Jesus was always aware of God's presence. For us, as people who follow Jesus Christ, who believe in him, we never, ever, ever stand alone. We have to recollect ourselves, though, to know that. There are very difficult times, and we've all experienced them in life, when we feel that the life has done us wrong, somebody's done us wrong, and we've been left alone. In that denial of Jesus three times by Peter, he certainly experiences that. Then at that point, he also calls three of his disciples. I mean, the betrayal by Judas, the denial by Peter, and all these other things that are happening to him, and yet he goes off to pray. And he takes with him three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, and he goes to pray and asks them just to be with him, to right. pray with him, to be that
support.
That support of friendship, too. And I think sometimes we don't think of Jesus in the terms of friendship.
Right.
You know, he had friends. These were disciples, yes. He was not the commander in chief. He was their friend.
Right.
And they were there praying. And of course, as we know, they fell asleep. And that, I'm sure, hurt him quite a bit. But in the same time, he knew their weaknesses as a human being. Mm-hmm. But what strikes me in those verses, and I'm anticipating that everybody's going to listen or to read this, the first part of this gospel yourselves. But we know that Jesus also, in that prayer with James and John and Peter, who fell asleep, he was asking the Father to let the cup pass from him, the suffering, the denials, the betrayals, the difficulties, many events that would happen leading up to the cross. But he said those incredible words, as God, but also as a human being, Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass without my drinking it, but your will be done. It's the same as Mary, at the beginning of this story of ours, who said, I am the handmaid of the Lord. I'm the maidservant of the Lord. Let it be done to me. Mm-hmm. Let it be done to me. God's will be done. Those are not just flippant kind of sayings to get me through the day, but it's a life commitment. Whenever Jesus was saying, your will be done, mine is, I don't want to go through this. Mm-hmm. This is a hard road to face, but your will be done. That's a life commitment. And I think especially during this Holy Week and beginning on this Palm Sunday of the Passion is to think, how much am I in tune with his very heart, which is, mm-hmm. let God's will be done in me. I'm probably a very controlling person, mm-hmm. or many of us are, but at times we have to turn it over to God. So any of us that today are facing difficulty situations, maybe some of those that Jesus had dealing with Peter and Judas and others, but knowing that his life had a purpose, and that was to give us life, to die for us on the cross, to save us, to conquer our sins, and to open heaven to each one of us. Let your will be done. Let God's will be done in each one of us. The final thing that I would just say before we take a break here is Jesus also stood up in front of false accusations by religious leaders, false accusations by the crowds, false accusations by the powers of Rome in the person of Pilate. So there's many times that there are lobbyists around us.
Right.
We live in a political world, and we have, I mean, lobbies, of course, is a dignified profession. I don't mean that. But a crowd mentality can really harm a person, bullying, we call it today, mm-hmm. and so many other things that really give a person an unfair chance in life. And that's certainly what Jesus is facing as he faces Pilate, and the crowds keep crying, crucify him, crucifying. It's the odds are unfair and insurmountable in so many ways. And yet Jesus stood there and took that treatment. And I always, just the last thought on that is, here you have God standing in front of man, God who created us being accused by a man. Because Pilate, the crowds, they're human beings. Jesus is both God because he's here to redeem us, mm-hmm. but he's also a man. And the pressures of a society around us that is unfair at times, that throws up his hands, says, I don't know what to do, I can't help you. I mean, that's we all experience that in some ways. I think socially, politically, worldwide, we're going through that right now. But let's look at Jesus. He stood there knowing that the power of God is greater. Let's never, never, ever lose sight that God's power is greater than human power, that God's grace can conquer all.
Our Shepherd's View will continue.
Bishop Michael Mulvey has prepared a weekly video series entitled Growing in Grace, Lenten Reflections with Bishop Mulvey. It began on Ash Wednesday and will continue every Sunday in Lent. In this series, the bishop offers his own personal stories and reflections. He also shares how the Word of God can transform our hearts in preparation for the solemn sacrifice of Holy Week. leading to the glorious redemption of Easter Sunday. These videos are available on the Diocese of Corpus Christi website, the Diocese YouTube channel, and diocesan social media platforms. You may also download transcripts in English and Spanish. The videos and resources are now available at diocesecc.org/Lent.
This is Our Shepherd's View with the Most Reverend Michael Mulvey, Bishop of Corpus Christi.
Reflecting on this very dramatic gospel, of course, Holy Week beginning today, and Bishop continues with his reflection on this gospel that we will be reading today at Mass.
So I want to pick up now. I've given kind of a summary version, just walking through it, talking about the different experiences of Jesus in his life and what he was facing with betrayal and denial and prayer and failing to have his friends awake with him and those kind of things. All of that leads us up then to the very moment of Jesus is being condemned to death. And I want to pick up there and I'll actually read the gospel now so we can really think about it, meditate upon it, spend some time with it. Now Jesus stood before the governor and he questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "You say so." And when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he made no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they are testifying against you?" But he did not answer him one word. So the governor was greatly amazed. Now, on the occasion of the feast, the governor was accustomed to releasing to the crowd one prisoner whom they wished. And at that time, there was a notorious prisoner named Barabbas. So when they had assembled, Pilate said to them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus called Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had handed him over. While he was still seated on the bench, his wife sent him a message, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man. I suffered much in a dream today because of him." The chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas, but to destroy Jesus. And the governor said to them in reply, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" They answered, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus called Christ?" They said, "Let him be crucified." But he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" And they only shouted the louder, "Let him be crucified." When Pilate saw that he was not succeeding at all, but that a riot was breaking out instead, he took water and washed his hands in the sight of the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. Look to it yourselves." And the whole people said in reply, "His blood be upon us and upon our children." Then he released Barabbas to them. But after he had Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. And so I just want to say in this particular section, again, the incredible pressure of people gathering together in the name of evil, people gathering together in the name of injustice, people gathering in the name of being dishonest, and spreading lies and gossip and things. How much damage can be done? And this is really at the heart of Jesus's being condemned. And then people who do have control over things washing their hands, "I have nothing to do with it."
Right.
This is our society. This is what evil can do in a society. It can throw us against each other. It can create us in us a sense that I have no responsibility at all. We do have responsibility. We do have to stand up to the powers of this world and be truthful, not in an arrogant way and not in a belligerent way and not in a forceful way, but just to be the truth in the society that we live in and not to be afraid, because Jesus in this moment was trembling as a human, but he knew in his heart he was doing what was right. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus inside the praetorium and gathered the whole cohort around him. They stripped off his clothes and threw a scarlet military cloak around him. Weaving a crown out of thorns, they placed it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And kneeling before him, they mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They spat upon him and took the reed that kept striking him at the head. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the cloak, dressed him in his own clothes, and led him off to crucify him. And as they were going out, they met a Cyrenian named Simon. This man they pressed into service to carry his cross. Just another little pause there. You know, how many humiliations we may be going through.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of all this, false accusations and all of that was going on, there was the humiliation that they laid upon him, the punishments that he was put through. And I, you know, we look at that, I mean, many of us would buckle under something like that. But there are also great saints. I'm thinking of Carnot Van Thuan in Vietnam, who mm-hmm. spent 13 years in this kind of a situation. But what allows a person, what kept Jesus going, he knew that he was doing the Father's will. Mm-hmm. He knew he was doing what was good for humanity, for each one of us. He had an interior purpose in life. And for us to be able to face our world today, we need an interior purpose. We need an interior life, a life of prayer in front of God, knowing that it is God who sustains us and saves us. Jesus shows us that here. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, they gave Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall. But when he had tasted it, he refused to drink. And after they crucified him, they divided his garments by casting lots. Then they sat down and kept watch over him there. And they placed over his head a written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two revolutionaries were crucified with him, one on his right and the other on his left. Those passing by reviled him, shaking their heads and saying, "You, who destroy the temple and build it up in 3 days, save yourself if you are the Son of God, and come down from this cross." Likewise, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders mocked him and said, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. So he is the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now if he wants him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The revolutionaries who were crucified with him also kept abusing him in the same way. From noon onward, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And about 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of the bystanders who heard it said, "He is calling out for Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran to get a sponge. He soaked it in wine and, putting it on a reed, gave it to him to drink. But the rest said, "Wait, let's see if Elijah comes to save him." But Jesus cried out again in a loud voice and gave up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the sanctuary was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth quaked, rocks were split, tombs were opened, and the bodies of many saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming forth from their tombs after the resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. The centurion and the men with him who were keeping watch over Jesus feared greatly when they saw the earthquake and all that was happening, and they said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." You know, when I talked about this interior purpose, this interior movement, when we do have a purpose in life and we know that it is divine, it's not something that just what I think up is what I want to do or my plans, because Jesus submits all that he as a human may have done or wanted to do in giving it over to God's will. the greatest witness for us today as Christians, as Catholic Christians, is to do God's will and to be faithful to it amidst all the noise, the rancor, the injustice, the anything else that we see around us that we see as a force against who we are. Nothing is against us, and Jesus proves that in this total act of love of giving himself. Everything is subject to God's love, God's mercy, and God's plan. And when we follow Jesus, we follow him with his plan for humanity, and that is to love everyone as God loves everyone, to be the first to love everyone as Jesus took the first step, to see Jesus in all of our neighbors, to be the ones who, in community with others, have the force of Jesus living among us and submitting ourselves to God's plan. The church has a great mission and has a great future, and that means each one of us not doing our own thing, not trying to show our own holiness to others, but to let the holiness of Christ that we see here crucified and risen shine forth through us. So I pray for everyone on this during this Holy Week that the voices of Holy Week, which are read throughout the week in our liturgies and our prayers, that it may affect all of us, that we may become more committed to Christ, more faithful to God's plan in each of our lives. God bless each one of you for this Holy Week.
Thank you, Bishop. God bless you. And that is our Shepherd's View for this week.
This has been our Shepherd's View with the Most Reverend Michael Mulvey, Bishop of Corpus Christi. Our Shepherd's View is a production of 89.5 KLUX and the Diocese of Corpus Christi's Office of Communications and Public Relations. You can hear the podcast of this program at goccn.org. Thank you for listening.
The term shalom is usually translated as peace. Often, however, when concepts are moved from one language to another, something is lost in the translation. Shalom encompasses much more than the absence of external conflict or internal turmoil. Shalom is the state of condition of experiencing what is needed to live a fully human life, one that is not wanting in any of those elements we consider essential to complete the development of one's personal potential and therefore the richness of community life. For the Sisters of the Incarnate Word and Blessed Sacrament, these essentials include a rich and invigorating relationship with the source of all that is good, the source of all life. With the opening of Shalom Place, the Spirit Center now offers two significant settings for encounters with this God who is love. The Spirit Center is available to groups of all faith traditions. For more information, visit BlunserSpiritCenter.org. To book your next retreat, call 361-888-7537. Till then, Shalom.